ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु तं भागवत सेवया भगवते उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्टिकी। श्रीमद्भागवतम सेकंड कैंटो चैप्टर 10 टेक्स्ट 5। अवतारानुचरितम् अवतारानि चरितम् हरेश चशानुवर्तिनाम् पुंसाम् ईशकथा प्रोक्ता नानाख्यानोपबृंहिता। अवतारानुचरितम् हरिश्चानुवर्तिनाम् पुंसामीश कथा प्रोक्ता नानाख्यानोपबृंहिता। अवतारानुचरितम् हरिश्चानुवर्तिनाम् पुंसामीश कथा प्रोक्ता नानाख्यानोपबृंहिता। अवतारानुचरितम् हरिश्चानुवर्तिनाम् पुंसाम् ईश कथा प्रोक्ता नानाख्यानोपबृंहिता।
How many of you memorized it already then? Okay. Okay, start from that side. Say the first line.
Avataram Anucharitam.
Avataram Anucharitam.
Good. You memorized in the class only? Okay. We are especially emphasizing these verses because these verses are very important. We're coming from Chatushloki. From Chatushloki we are coming to 10 characteristics of Srimad Bhagavatam. And this chapter is describing what are those 10 characteristics, and then the first verse described the ten characteristics, and then from third verse is describing specific, elaborating on those characteristics. Okay, from the girl's side, I remember. No one. Okay, tomorrow you do that. How many of you memorized the verse number 3? The verse of day before yesterday. Okay, verse number 3. Okay, I thought, Jamuna, weren't you supposed to memorize it? The verse number 3 or verse? Or yesterday's verse? Yesterday. You did yesterday's verse. Okay. So, verse number 3, day before yesterday's verse. Who remembered? Okay. Parul, you raised your hand? Oh, you thought it was 4. Okay, verse number 3. So this verse is describing what? Sarga and Visarga. What are the 10 symptoms? 10 characteristics? Sarga, Visarga, Sthana, Poshana, Utaya, Manvantara, Nishanukaha, Nirodha, Mukti, Ashraya. How many?
10.
Okay. So, verse number 3 is describing 2. Sarga and Visarga. What is Sarga? And how sarga has been elaborated? What is sarga actually?
16
elements. What are those 16 elements?
Five walking senses.
Okay, let us go through the verse. Bhuta means panchamahabhuta. Matra means tanmatra, the objects of the senses. Then Bhuta, Matra, Indriya,
knowledge
acquiring senses. How many? 5. No, knowledge acquiring senses is 5. Yeah. Bhuta is 5, Matra, Tanmatra is 5, and Indriya are 5. Bhuta, Matra, Driya, Matrendriya, Dhyan, then? Dhyan means?
Mind.
So that is, these 16 are Janma Sarga Udharita. Janma Sarga Udharita means the creation, the manifestation of creation, and Udharita means called. So the primary creation is described through these 16 factors. Bhuta, Matra, Indriya, and Dhriya. So, Bhuta Matrin, Driya Dhyan, Janma Sarga, Udarhita, and then Brahmano Guna Vaishammar, Visarga, Paurusha, Smritaha. So, Brahmana means of Brahma, the first Purusha, Guna Vaishamma, by interaction of the three modes. The resultant activities caused by Brahma due to the interaction or by the interaction of the three modes is called Visarga or is known as Visarga Smritaha. Is Visarga Paurusha Smritaha. And Paurusha means resultant activity. So what is, so you understood what is Sarga and what is Visarga. What Brahma did, what Brahma manifested due to the interaction of the modes of material nature, that aspect is known as Visarga. So let's read the translation by Srila Prabhupada. The elementary creation of 16 items of matter, namely the 5 elements, fire, water, land, air and sky, sound, form, taste, smell, touch, and the eyes, these are the sound, form, taste, smell and touch, are known as the tanmatras, or the objects of the senses, and the senses, the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, skin and mind, skin. And then mind is known as sarga, whereas subsequent resultant interaction of the modes of material nature is called visarga. Who was it caused by? The subsequent resultant interaction of the modes of material nature is caused, that is caused by Brahma, is called visarga. So we got that. And then yesterday's verse, how many of you memorized? Okay. Monica raised her hand first. You'd say it. So, now in this verse, sthiti, what has been described here as sthiti, is sthanam. So sthanam, what is sthiti? Sthiti is Vaikuntha Vijaya. Vaikuntha Vijaya means, Vaikuntha Vijaya, the victory of the Lord of Vaikuntha. The Vijaya. The glory or the victory, the right situation for the living entities to obey the law of the Lord and thus be in perfect peace of mind under the protection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, sthiti is Vaikuntha Vijaya. Vaikuntha Vijaya means to follow the instructions and follow the laws of the Lord of the Vaikuntha. And here the Vaikuntha, the term Vaikuntha is very significant. When we follow the laws of the Lord, then what happens? We become free from anxiety. We become free from anxiety. And why do we become free from anxiety? Why? Because He gives us, when we follow His law, He gives us protection. So, and tad anugraha, His anugraha, anugraha means His mercy. His mercy is known as poshanam. So Vaikuntha Vijaya, sthiti is Vaikuntha Vijaya, and poshanam, tad anugraha. We follow Him, we abide by His instructions, we accept His authority, and by doing that, we receive His mercy. So, tad anugraha. So, what is? After that comes? What is? What comes after that? After? That portionam aspect? Utaya. And utaya is come here, the utaya has been described last. But poshanam, His protection. Sthiti and poshanam. Poshanam is maintenance by His protection. We are protected by His mercy. And then after that, although it is utaya, but before that, manvantarani. What is manvantar has come before. Why? Manvantar, what is manvantarani? Manvantar? Manvantar means sadharma. To follow, to abide by the sadharma. What is the sadharma? Sadharma sangsthapako. Sadharma means follow the dharma of the soul. That is the sadharma. Or which is also known as Nitya Dharma. There are two types of dharma. One is Naimittik Dharma, the other is Nitya Dharma. Naimittik Dharma means the dharma of the body, and dharma related to the body. All the dharmas that are related to the body, they are Naimittik Dharma, or temporary religion. Relative religion is related to the body. say a Brahmana has a specific dharma, Vaishya has a specific dharma, Kshatriya has a specific dharma. So these are Naimittik dharma. Similarly, a man has a specific dharma, woman has another kind of dharma. Then a factory worker has his dharma, communist has his dharma, Muslims have their dharma. These are all Naimittik dharma. But thus when the beyond this relative dharma of the body is the dharma of the soul. And since the soul is nitya, this dharma is also known as nitya dharma. Since the soul is sat, this dharma is known as sat dharma. Since the soul is sanatan, therefore this dharma is also known as sanatan dharma. So this dharma, since the soul is a jiva, therefore this dharma is known as jaiva dharma. So this particular dharma goes on in various names like nitya dharma, sad dharma, sanatan dharma, jaiva dharma. But it indicates the dharma of the soul. So what the manus are instructing, manvantarani, sad dharma, and then utaya karma vashana. The word utaya means impetus to work. Utaya. The impetus to work is karma vasana. Desire for fruitive activities. So we got how many?
Four.
So in the previous verse, how many we got?
Two.
Two. Two plus four is?
Six.
Very well. Then today's verse is describing avatarani charitam. Avatara means incarnation of Godhead. That everybody knows. What's the meaning of the word? Avatar. Avatar means incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And anucharitam means activities. Hare of the Personality of Godhead, cha also, acha wait, asya is of his, anuvartinam, followers. Very good. Oh, you're saying it from the book. I thought, anyway, Shyamohan is very scholarly. And Pungsham means? Pungsham? Of the person. Ishakatha. Ishakatha, the science of God, Prokta, is said, Nana, various Akhyana narrations, Upabringhita described. Please. Avatara,
avatara,
incarnation of Godhead.
Incarnation of Godhead.
Anucharitam,
anucharitam,
activities.
Activities.
Hare,
hare,
of the Personality of Godhead.
Of the Personality of Godhead.
Cha, also.
Also.
Asya,
asya,
of his.
Of his.
Anubartinam,
anubartinam,
followers.
Pungsham,
of the person.
Person.
Ishakatha, the science of God.
Prokta,
is said.
Nana,
various. Akhyana,
narration.
Upabringhita,
described.
Translation by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. The science of God describes the incarnations of the Personality of Godhead and his different activities together with the activities of his great devotees. It's not only the activities of the Lord, but along with the activities of his devotees. Because Lord's activities also describe the activities of his devotees, because the Lord is never separated from his devotees. So, did you repeat after me? No. Okay. Please repeat after me. The science of God, describes the incarnation of the personality of Godhead and his different activities together with the activities of his great devotees. So here we are getting Ishanu Katha. Manvantar, after Manvantar comes Ishanu Katha. So in this verse, just Ishanu Katha has been described. So 6 plus 1 is 7. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. During the course of the existence of the cosmic manifestation, the chronology of history is created. Recording the activities of the living entities, People in general have a tendency to learn the history and narrations of different men and times. But due to a lack of knowledge in the science of Godhead, they are not apt to study the history of the incarnations of the personality of Godhead. It should always be remembered that the material creation is created for the salvation of the conditioned souls. The merciful Lord, out of his causeless mercy, descends to various planets in the material world and acts for the salvation of the conditioned souls. That makes the history and narration worth reading. Srimad Bhagavatam offers such transcendental topics of the Lord in relation with great devotees. Therefore, the topics of the devotees and the Lord are to be given respectful oral reception. So, Ishanu Katha Avataranu Charitam Harishchashanu Vartinam Puksham Isha Katha Prokta Nana Khyano Pubringhita. The science of God describes the incarnations of the personality of Godhead and his different activities together with the activities of his great devotee. The principal aspect of Srimad Bhagavatam is actually this. Bhagavat, the word Bhagavat means narrations about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his activities, his and also another meaning of the word Bhagavat is a person devotee, a personality of devotee. There are two types of Bhagavats. One is Grantha Bhagavat, which describes the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotees, and the other is a person Bhagavat. Person Bhagavat is the one whose life is actually Bhagavat. Just by looking at him, just by scrutinizingly observing his life, we see what the Supreme Personality of Godhead is and what's his relationship with the devotees of the Lord. So, this is the main aspect of Srimad Bhagavatam. The description, akhan. Akhan means narration about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Upabringhita described. And this is the main aspect of Srimad Bhagavatam, which gradually leads to the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, which describes the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which describes the activities of the Supreme, Supreme Personality of Godhead. If the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the general term, then Krishna's identity will be Supreme, Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. He is the Swayam Bhagavan. And from him emanates, from him expands different incarnations. These incarnations have been classified in this way. Krishna's expansions have been classified as this way. The the first is Krishna himself in Vrindavan, who is the son of Nanda Maharaj. Brajendra Nandan Krishna. Aradhya Bhagavan Brajeshwar Tanayam. So Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the worshipable Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the son of Nanda Maharaj, Brajeshwar Tanay. Who is the Brajeshwar Tanay? Brajeshwar Tanay is the son of Nanda Maharaj, is Krishna. And Staddhamo Vrindavanam, his abode is Vrindavan. So this Supreme, Supreme Personality of Godhead first expands as Balaram. He expands. In Vrindavan we find Krishna and Balaram. So Balaram is his first expansion. Then he expands in Dwarka. Krishna is also expanding in Dwarka. Vrindavan is the highest, and below that is, right below Vrindavan is Dwarka. So in Dwarka he expands himself as Vasudev. And there Balaram expands as Shankarshan. So in Dwarka we find the Chaturbhuha. Vasudev, Shankarshan, Pradyumna and Aniruddha. And then the next expansion is in Vaikuntha. In Vaikuntha he is Narayan. And then Narayan expands in various incarnations. Like Narayan's expansion is, Narayan's expansion in order to create the material nature are the Purushavatars. Different Purushavatars. First Purushavatar is Mahavishnu or Karanadakshay Vishnu. The second Purushavatar is Garbhodakshay Vishnu. Second Purushavatar is Garbhodakshay Vishnu, and then he expands as Kshirodakshay. Mahavishnu or Karanadakshay Vishnu lies in the causal ocean, and as he breathes, and due to the breathing of Mahavishnu, different universes are created. Then he expands himself and enters in each universe as Garbhodakshay Vishnu. And from whose navel comes lotus, and Brahma is created. Brahma is situated in that lotus. Then the next expansion is Kshirodakshay Vishnu. In that incarnation, the Lord expands himself as the super soul of all the living entities. And he also expands himself into each single atom and molecule. So that is the function of Kshirodakshay Vishnu. And the Vishnu that appears, or the incarnations that appear to protect the dharma. Yada, that verse, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata,
Abhuthanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijammaham. That dharma sangsthapak avatar who protects the dharma and establishes the dharma, jiva dharma, and who also is paritranaya sadhunam, who protects the sadhus, and vinashaya cha duskritam, annihilates the miscreants. Those incarnations are actually the expansions of Kshirodakshaya Vishnu. Different incarnations on the planets are incarnations or expansions of Kshirodakshaya Vishnu. So in this way, the Lord expands in various incarnations. They are classified, these incarnations are generally classified in six categories. Those six categories are, as I just mentioned, Purushavatar, Mahavishnu, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, Kshirodakshaya Vishnu. Then Leelavatars. The Lord performs different Leelas, pastimes. And those incarnations are known as Leelavatar. Then Gunavatar, the three modes of material nature are maintained by three incarnations of the Lord, or He expands Himself to maintain the modes of material nature, and those three Gunavatars are Brahma, Vishnu and Mahesh. Brahma, Vishnu and Maheshwar. And then there are Yugavatars. In order to establish the Yuga Dharma, He comes in different ages as Yugavatar. Then there are Manvantar avatars. As different Manus change, the Lord incarnates to be present as the presiding deities of that particular span of time. In each Manvantar, Lord appears as an incarnate. Manvantar avatar, and then the last one is Shaktavesh avatar. Shaktavesh, Shakti, Avesh. When the Lord empowers somebody in order to accomplish some specific mission, that is called, they are known as Shaktavesh avatar. So these are the six categories of incarnations. Although there are six categories, but there are innumerable incarnations. But Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. Sri Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna is not an incarnation. So Srimad Bhagavatam very clearly describes that. After describing different incarnations, comes to the ninth canto, where Lord Ramchandra's incarnations and pastimes have been described. Then in the 10th canto, Krishna's incarnations have been described. Now that is the highest understanding. So this is the perfect spiritual understanding, which has been given by Srila Vyasadeva in Srimad Bhagavatam. Avataranu charitam harish chashanu varnitam of Hari. These incarnations are of Lord Hari. So here Hari indicates Sri Krishna. And there Pumsham Isha Katha Prokta Nana Khyana Upapringi. In different akhyan, in different narrations, they have been upapringhita, described. Okay, so today we got which one? Ishanu Katha. Manvantar, Ishanu Katha, then there will be Nirodha, then Mukti, and then Ashraya. So tomorrow we'll describe about Nirodha and Mukti. And then the seventh verse. So How many will be left with? No. I mean, after the Nirodha and Mukti, what is that? Ashraya. The seventh verse will describe the ashraya aspect. Is it interesting to know? You are appreciating this knowledge, this wisdom. Actually, this is a very nice chapter. 9th and 10th chapter of the second canto are very beautiful, very, very deep and very clear. So if we understand this, 9th and 10th chapter, the subject matter that have been described here, we'll have a perfect understanding of Srimad Bhagavatam, which will create a very nice foundation for us. In our heart, to create a very nice foundation. Then Srimad Bhagavatam will become very meaningful. Otherwise, just reading, what is the use of reading but not understanding? So it is important that we understand what we are reading. We are supposed to read Bhagavatam, but why are we reading Srimad Bhagavatam? In this way, we understand that. Okay, I'll stop this class today. Hare Krishna. Any question?
In the Prabhupada, it said the material world is created for the salvation of the living entities. But if you look at how many living entities are actually saved, the numbers are very skewed. So in that sense, how can one express if someone challenges like that?
Well, how do you know?
Look how few devotees there are, even in the devotee fold, you know, how many people are actually liberated at the end of this life. So is the material world acting negatively impacted by its creation on the living entities?
You see, Krishna's mercy is inconceivable. That's why I'm asking, how do you know? Because Krishna's mercy is inconceivable. There's no way of knowing how Krishna is delivering through this movement, through this process. Can you imagine somebody is dying and a Harinam party is passing by? The guy may have been the most sinful person, you know, had nothing to do with Krishna consciousness, not had an iota of pious activity in his whole life. And when he is dying, he heard the Hare Krishna kirtan. What will happen to him? There is no way of knowing how Krishna can deliver living entities. I'll give you an example. This is actually describing the glory of Tulsi Devi. You see, Jamaraj knows when someone is going to die. And he sends his Jamadutas to reclaim that, to bring that person to Jamala for judgment. So one person was very sinful, very sinful. And he was about to die. So Jamadutas just came. They're waiting, you know, at a particular time he's going to die. How is he going to die? A bull would come and gore him, and he would leave his body. Now, true to his destiny, the bull came, and for no rhyme or reason, maybe must have been some rhyme or reason, maybe he was wearing a red shirt. The bull charged, gored him, and he was dead. But immediately Vishnudutas came, and Jamadutas said, what's going on? Now why Vishnudutas came? At least we know that for Ajamil he chanted the holy name. He chanted the name of Narayan, but what about this person?
He didn't chant the holy name or anything. And so they went back to Jamaraj, because Jamaraj told them, when you see the Vishnu Dutas, don't go near them. Just offer obeisance and leave. Because they belong to another domain, and you do not have any entry to that area. So then they went back to Jamaraj and asked what happened. And Jamaraj told them that when the bull gored him, and his body, there was a tulasi leaf, and he left his body in contact with the tulasi leaf. And as a result of that, Vishnu Dutas came to meet him. Just by being in contact with the tulasi, he became completely free from all sinful reactions. So there is no way of knowing, you know, what kind of good fortune this movement is creating all over the world.
Yeah, it's interesting that I was often wondering what is the purpose of human life for so many people if the chances of ever getting in contact with Krishna consciousness is completely zero. The people living in some forest in South America or the tundra or somewhere.
What's the possibility of them
ever getting into contact with Krishna consciousness?
Well, they have to wait for Indradumna Maharaj. for him to go on his rainforest safari or Amazon trip, and he is going to create their good fortune. Actually, devotees are going everywhere to create their good fortune. And you know, that is why, you know, devotees have to take up the responsibility to preach. We should not become complacent and think that, you know, what we are doing is enough. It's never enough. We have to go out and create the good fortune. And that's what pleases Krishna the most. And when we try to create the good fortune for people, Krishna becomes pleased, and Krishna makes all the facilities for the devotees. Like, we have to simply desire to do something for Krishna, and Krishna will make it happen. If it is beneficial for the propagation of Krishna consciousness. Well, in a similar note, we could also say, what was the hope for, say, here from South Africa? What was the hope for people in South Africa before Srila Prabhupada came to the West? And his devotees went to South Africa and started the propagation movement. So this is how Srila Prabhupada and his followers are creating the good fortune for the people in this world. Yes, you have continued.
Maharaj, another question. I was thinking about something from the Mahabharata where Dronacharya was a Brahmana, but he was engaged as a martial arts student for the Gauravas and the Pandavas. So is it acceptable for some of the qualities of the Varnas to overlap? For example, if a Brahmana, who is essentially scholarly Brahmana, has a capacity for business or vice versa. I mean, I look specifically in South Africa where there are a lot of uneducated people in government. See this every day.
Yeah, sure. You see, these, again, you know, this Varnasham is a naimittic dharma. As I said, you know, like a relative religion, not absolute religion. But Vaishnavism is the absolute religion. And therefore a Vaishnava is prepared to do anything that's necessary for serving Krishna. He may be a Brahmana, but he may take up the job of a Sudra. Not because he is incompetent as a Brahmana, but because he is transcendental to
Varnashram. Whatever is needed for Krishna's service, we'll do it. Whereas in Varnashram, they won't do that. In the Varnashram situation, generally, they won't do that. Even in common Indian culture, who is creating some disturbance for her mother? Gaurangi, what are you doing? You're wrestling? No? Or you're pacifying Radhika? Okay? Good. Let Radhika lie like that. Okay. In normal Indian society, in Hindu society, a person will never ever clean the toilet. And like, you know, I mean, a general feeling is, you know, like, you know, cleaning the toilet is not the job of a gentleman, you know, or a high class person. Mm. That is the job of the sweeper. But the Vaishnavas won't mind. Therefore, you see, when Lokanath Goswami found that Narottam Das Thakur was cleaning his toilet, you know, he was so touched. Because that is not a job, you know, usually, you know, a high-class person would do. What to speak of cleaning the toilet, you know, when the sweeper would come to the house, you know, everyone would be alert that nobody touches. I remember once I touched the toilet. I mean, while just before I was going to school, I happened to just, I don't even remember how I touched him or bumped into him. And it was a big thing, like I took my food and I was ready to go to school, but I had to take a bath and I had to miss the school that day because I touched. So this is how, you know, the Hindu society used to be. But the Vaishnavas, they don't mind cleaning the toilet or whatever is needed. So that is the difference. Like the Varnashram situation, you know, there may be this unusual situation. Dronacharya accepting the occupation of a Kshatriya is an unusual situation. Similarly, you know, Vishvamitra aspiring to become a Brahmana is an unusual situation. Being a Kshatriya is aspiring to become a Brahmana. Or Parashuram, a Brahmana becoming a Kshatriya, is an unusual situation. And there's a whole history behind that. You know, like why it happened. The Choru, the sacrificial offering that was meant for the Kshatriya woman, Kshatriya queen, was eaten up by the Brahmana's wife. And the result was, you know, a Kshatriya was born in a Brahmana family. So that's how unusual it is, or it used to be. But in the Vaishnava society, you know, and that's why, you see, the Vaishnavism was needed in a society like today's, where the Varnashankar is so prevalent. So you can't really ascertain what is one's Varna. So that's why, you know, since there is a Varnashankar, there is a, you know, unfortunate mixture everywhere, therefore let everybody become Vaishnava. Right? Does it answer your question? Yes, Kevin, what's your question?
There's written that there's eternally liberated souls and eternally conditioned souls. But how then is there a process of liberation if they're both either eternally liberated?
Yeah, okay. So the consideration is that the cause of a conditioned soul becoming conditioned
lies in the eternal sphere of time, in the spiritual domain. You see, since it is, the cause is there, therefore his conditioning is eternal. And when a conditioned soul goes back to the spiritual sky, because he is situated in the eternal domain, he is eternally liberated. Because once you are liberated, you are eternally liberated. Then it is not that, you know, that temporarily liberated or relatively liberated. It's eternally liberated. The main consideration is that it's not that eternally conditioned means that he is doomed to remain in his conditioned state forever. No. He is conditioned, but the cause of his condition is in the eternal sphere of time. That's why he's eternally conditioned. But if he takes the Krishna consciousness, he'll become eternally liberated. Any other question? Yes, Arti.
So much. Just one more thing about this Varnashram. When Srila Prabhupada said that he still wanted to implement that, he meant that he wanted to implement it within the devotee community, that there should be, that the division should be more clear?
Good point.
Or in the wider world.
It's a very good point. You see, the devotees may try to create a prototype and a kind of an exemplary model. But when you speak of Varnashram, establishing Varnashram, you know, it has to be at least, you know, spread over one kingdom. Because just a simple consideration, a Kshatriya. Who is a Kshatriya? Kshatriya is a person, he makes his law, or rather he abides by the Lord's law. Right? I mean, he is free. He establishes his authority over and above others by his prowess, by his might. So how will there be a Kshatriya in the democratic society? In the democratic society, by popular vote, when the leaders are established, where is the room for a Kshatriya? Kshatriya will pull out his sword, you know, and say that, look, I want this. And if you don't want to, then come, let's have a fight. But in the democratic society, is there any room for that? No. There is, actually the democratic power has become so well established that for an individual to come up and establish his authority over with his pride, with his might, is going to be difficult. That means he has to become more powerful than the government power and take over the government. Now that's not going to, democratic thing is a collective thing. And in this age, the individuals have become weak. Therefore, the collective power has become very, very strong. So strong that an individual cannot really face that properly. And then there's a worldwide phenomena of democracy. Like America has taken it upon themselves to establish democracy all over the world. And wherever there is no possibility, I mean, wherever that is being hampered, that democratic domain is being affected or hampered, the America intervenes and tries to. And you see, this is all politics. But the thing is, so that is one problem. Another problem in this age is that people are so atheistic that the individuals, say the kings, they are not going to follow, because of their atheistic nature, they are not following the tenets of dharma. The teachings are dharma is to follow the laws given by the Lord, but they don't believe in Lord.
So they are not actually following the laws given by the Lord. So what they are doing, they are becoming independent and they are becoming autocratic, they are becoming tyrannical, right? And as a result of that, you know, actually, that's why monarchy had to go, because the monarch became so tyrannical. So therefore, you know, the mob had to get rid of them. So in one hand, the Kshatriyas are not qualified in a true sense, and as a result of that, you know, monarchy had to go. And what was the option? There are only two options: democracy or communism. Now, of these two, democracy is better. Compared to communism, democracy is better. And in relation to monarchy and democracy, again, democracy is better. Therefore, you know, it is better to have democracy, because it is better than the worst. But Varnashram, you know, is essential to create a proper human society. See how democracy is affecting the society. In the democratic world, you see, again, democracy cannot really last by itself. It is not actually democracy what the world is seeing today. It is actually capitalism. It's capitalism. Capitalism means, you know, the rule of the Vaishyas. See, the rule of the Kshatriyas have been substantiated by, or rather has been replaced by, the rule of the Vaishyas. The Vaishyas, Kshatriyas, rule with their power. The Vaishyas rule with the monetary power. Whereas Kshatriyas rule with the military power. The Vaishyas rule with their monetary power. And the next step is actually communism, with the power of the people, power of the mass, power of the people, you know, for the people. That's what democracy is, power of the people, for the people, of the people, by the people. And who are the people? Most of the people are Sudras. So in the Shudra society, it is a better option to have the Vaishya ruling, because the Vaishyas are... So capitalism is somewhat better than democracy. And it is actually happening. The ruling is actually going on with the financial, you know, power. And so to undo that, we have to actually have the Varnashram. To set up, you know, a proper foundation. Well, the point that I was actually trying to make here, let me clear that point first. You see, that's why today's world is actually the world of Vaishyas. The world today has become the world of Vaishyas, and where some are Sudras, some are actually the the world today is the world of Sudras, where some Vaishyas are ruling over them, right? And that is why the tendency is to employ them, give them employment, give them jobs. The Vaishyas are doing that. They are creating job opportunities for the people to make their capital, to make their money. Use them to make their money. And most of the people are actually fitting into that. And this Vaishya community, with the help of Kali, have created a very wonderful structure. And that structure is, the whole society has become very, very complex. And so much so that if you don't take up a job, if you don't conform to this system, then you won't be able to survive. They are building, you know, apartments. And that is where you have to live, in the cities. The whole population has moved into the cities. You have to live in the city. In order to live in the city, you need $1,000 for to pay the rent. Right? In order to live in the city, you have to buy things that will cost you another $1,000. In the city, to send your children for school to school, you have to spend another $1,000. In order to live in the city, you have to have your car. For that, you need another $1,000. In order to live in a city, you have to have your insurance or other insurances, and for that you'll need another $1,000. So just in order to live in a city, you need $5,000. And what they're doing? They're giving you $4,000, and they're giving you a credit card, right? Whatever you're lacking, okay, you put your credit card and you'll get it. And this is how you're getting bound in this system, tied down in this system in such a terrible way that you can't really get out of it. With this credit card, they're creating this facility to get credit, which you are allowed to pay for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. You buy a house, and you have to pay for 20 years. So that means for 20 years you are stuck. For 20 years you have to work like a dog to pay for your health insurance, to pay for your house mortgage. So this is how the whole society, people in this society, have become enslaved. And there's no way they can get out from this imprisonment. They are thinking, I'm fine, I'm free, I'm living in a big house, I have a car, I'm enjoying my life. But at what expense? At what cost? So, and as a result of that, what is happening? Everybody is getting into that rat race. In order to survive, you have to get a job. In order to get a job, you have to get a degree. In order to get a job, you have to be very, very, you must have done very well in your educational career and so forth. So you are, this is how, see what is happening, a person who is actually Brahminical, he is becoming a factory worker. Right? A person who is supposed to be a Kshatriya by nature, he is becoming an accountant. And so forth. Right? Like, as a result of that, man's natural ability doesn't have any scope to be expressed or enhanced. A man is simply stuck in this system that has been created. As a result of that, no one is happy. And this society, this system is telling you, if you have a lot of money, then only you'll be happy. So try to make a lot of money. And so they're running after that mirage. Let me make money, let me make money. Somehow or other. But the reality is that not by making money that you become happy. Happiness is the ability to fulfill your desire. Happiness is relative to your ability to express your inner urges. Right? But in this society there's no room for that. There's no way you can actually fulfill your desire. You want to do certain things. But this system is not allowing you to do that. So everyone is running after money. But no one is actually running after happiness. Everyone is running after money, thinking that money is happiness. But that's not the real happiness. Like a person probably would be more happy just living in a village, cultivating a piece of land, and giving expression to what he wants to do. And that is what, that is why, Prabhupada was so emphatic that we have to establish Varnashram. Through Varnashram, everybody gets a chance to do what he wants to do. Not that because by doing that he'll get money, But by doing that, he'll feel happy internally. A person who is Brahminical, he'll be happy being engaged in Brahminical activities. Person who is a Kshatriya, he'll be happy being in a Kshatriya kind of activities. And so forth with the Vaishyas and Sudras. Sudras are not counted because they can't think. They don't know what they want. And that's what has happened in this age. Like everyone has become a Sudra. And as a result of that, they don't know what they want. And when they get money, what happens? They drink, they womanize, they gamble, and this is how they just squander their money. And that's what is happening everywhere. You can see that all these people are Sudras. They get money, they get drunk. So the society has become Sudra society. So now, you know, like it's a big job to kind of bring back, you know, the Varnashram system.
Well, so I was wondering, I was thinking that at first we had the Kshatriyas ruling very properly until they became corrupt. And then we had in India the Brahmanas basically ruling over the people with their superior knowledge, and that they kept like that. And in Europe you had the clergy that was so, they ruled the society. And now we have the Vaishyas ruling. So there will be a time when the Sutras are ruling the whole earth. So
you saw that in Russia.
Yeah.
You saw that in China.
Right. It's such a down spiral existence.
Right, exactly. And it started off with the Brahmanas, actually. It started, you know how it started? How it all started? When Sringi cursed Parikshit Maharaj. That's how it was started. The Brahmanas, instead of protecting the Kshatriyas, they cursed the Kshatriyas to die. A Kshatriya king. And then the Brahmanas, you know, taking advantage of their position in the society, they started to exploit the society, introduced all kinds of things that are actually, in the name of the scriptural injunctions, they introduced all kinds of activities that were destructive for the society. And that's why Garuda Puran actually is describing that Rakshasa Kalimashritta Jayante Brahma Jonishu. The Rakshasas taking advantage, some Rakshasas taking advantage of the age of the Kali, took birth in the Brahmana families, and they actually destroyed the Vedic culture. That's how it all started. And then when there was not qualified Brahmins to guide the Kshatriyas became independent. And they started to fight among themselves. They started to act in a tyrannical, they became despot, they became completely autocratic tyrants. And as a result of that, you know, people got fed up with them. Got rid of them. Or in India, because of the taking advantage of the conflict between the Kshatriya kings in India, the Muslims came and took over.
Sorry, Maharaj, did that trace back to the fight between the followers of Daksha and the followers of Shiva, because so much of the cursing and counter cursing that went on in that arena, that you know, you will become like this and you will be like this, and still. What stays in on this purpose, and this is also inevitable of what will happen in the future. So it goes even further back.
Yeah. Right. You see, like the internal conflict is the cause of destruction. Yeah, Prabhupada said nothing can destroy this movement. It's only the fight between the devotees, and internal conflict among the devotees can destroy this movement. Nothing from outside can destroy this movement. Okay. Thank you, Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.